Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, live from the Star Worldwide Network studios, here are your hosts, Light Beer Chris Clements and Dark Money Sean Noble.
Welcome back to another episode of Light Beer Dark Money. I'm Sean Noble.
And I'm Chris Clements.
And today we've got a great guest.
We do. We do. We have an old friend of mine joining us. An old friend of mine back when I worked for a gentleman by the name of Morton Blackwell.
So this is the Leadership Institute days.
And met a very dynamic gentleman named Dan Quiggle, who was running most of the programs back then. And just an incredible speaker, despite the fact that he went to UCLA.
Of course, you guys have the rivalry of USC UCLA. Dan, thanks for being here.
I just had to throw that in there, Dan.
So, Chris, you shouldn't feel bad because you went to a lesser known school. You should be very confident. Not everyone can get into UCLA. We have standards. And so,
well, I'm so glad that we beat you in football this year.
Well, listen, it's called philanthropy. Sometimes when you have all the trophies in the case, you tend to, nobody wants to play with you anymore. So we give sometimes you an opportunity to feel good about yourself.
And we do. We feel really good about ourselves right now. Well, Dan has had an incredible career, and now he's a world-renowned speaker, inspiring optimistic leadership at the Quiggle Group. And he's an author, wrote a book about Ronald Reagan called Lead Like Reagan. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, and worked for President Reagan, and we had Peggy Grandy on here last week, and she was amazing. And I know you guys worked together.
Yeah, she's such a great leader, and I love her book, The President Will See You Now. And you know, she gets to go around the country and around the world and talk about politics and President Reagan and business, all kinds of things. So she's definitely a good friend and just a superstar.
Yeah, I mean, she was tremendous.
Yeah.
Well, where have you been lately? You said that you just got back from Austria.
Yeah, we did a quick, not quick, actually. We did 4 days in London, 4 days in Paris, 4 days in Rome, and 5 days in Innsbruck, Austria.
Wow.
Wow.
That's awesome. That's a little amazing. European vacation.
It was a European vacation. My son had never been there, so we got to see it through his eyes. And fortunately, he's 18, but he's very appreciative. So it always makes a big difference when the whole time he's saying, thank you for taking me. Thank you for giving me this great experience. I love that.
Not common for 18-year-olds.
That's great.
Yeah, I agree. We're
learned.
That's fantastic. Well, Dan, tell us about the Quiggle Group. Tell us some of the stuff you've been doing for the last several years. I mean, our time at the Leadership Institute, which was, you know, I think formative for both of us.
No, I'm definitely, Morton Blackwell is a big part of my life and, you know, all that he did for me and for so many young people across America. It's really inspiring. But, you know, I've been a serial entrepreneur. So I've had five different companies. I love building things and actually... you know, working to not just talking about things, but actually making them work. I still currently own a real estate title insurance company in Florida. But mainly for the last 8 years, I've been speaking full time. I get to speak to CEO groups all around the world. I speak a lot for YPO, EO, Vistage, groups like that. And then those companies hire me to speak to their leadership teams. And it's all on leadership, emotional intelligence. And, you know, it's interesting. The whole time I'm talking, I've got the mirror right here, looking right at myself. Am I practicing what I'm preaching? And, but, you know, I want to be a lifelong learner. I want to go to bed a little bit smarter each day. And so it's really exciting because I get to meet incredibly successful, optimistic problem solvers. I get to learn from them and then in turn, hopefully add value to their lives. And it's a win-win for everybody, hopefully.
That's fantastic. What's been your message lately as you've been talking to CEO groups and others?
Yeah, I think that there's a term that I like to use called creative destruction of your operations on a regular basis, stay competitive. It came from the Science of Success. Charles Koch from Koch Industries wrote a book called, a great business book called The Science of Success. And he talked about their success being creative destruction, the ability to kind of rip it apart and put it back together on a regular basis and not be afraid of change, but embrace it. And, you know, whether it's your leadership team, your products, your pricing, your margins from a business perspective, really reevaluating your operations regularly to make sure you're as efficient as possible and turning change into a positive thing because people are so afraid of it and kind of owning it and doing it regularly. And that's a powerful message because it just gives kind of a term and a process to something that we should be doing on our, you know, day in, day out with our leadership teams and with our companies. And so we hear a lot of people going back and say, we need to do a little more creative destruction. And then I cross-apply that to our personal lives. I mean, we get in a rut. We go to the same vacation spots. We eat the same restaurants. We order the same food, go to the same gym, same time, same day. It's the reason why, honestly, I don't have like a vacation home because I don't want to feel obligated to go somewhere specifically. I want to spend my whole life trying to create adventures for me and my family and for the people I care about. And that's all part of this process of creative destruction. Trying new things, taking new adventures.
Great way to look at it. I particularly appreciate your comment about the not having a vacation home. I learned that from my grandfather. You know, he said, don't buy toys, rent them. Because if you have a toy, whether it be a second house or a boat, or, you know, that's where you're going to spend all your time. And maybe that's good for you, you know, whatever. But it doesn't allow you to have a more full and rich experience in life. And so, you know, one of the things that I've done the last couple of years is that when I travel for work, as much as possible, I take the family.
Yeah.
And we make it work and leisure. And that's been great for our family. Dan, it seems to me, I read Charles Koch's book, actually. It was required reading for me when I was doing stuff with the Koch brothers years ago. But I think people fear destruction. And
that's a great point.
And so how do you explain to folks, hey, this isn't a negative thing. This is very much a positive thing. Because every, you know, you think of destruction, you think of, you know, bad. And so in the context of what Charles was writing and what you're talking about, it's actually very, very good and necessary if you want to grow.
Well, when companies don't change or when they don't embrace new technologies, new way of doing things, they become stagnant. And then eventually things come crashing down. I think we saw that this week with Southwest Airlines.
Yeah.
Completely. I mean, just from a culture and technology standpoint, you had an entire airline come to a halt because they weren't willing to make investments and just, you know, reinvestments in their company.
Well, I think that what's interesting about that, so I have a podcast called Garage to Goliath, Leaders Building Legacies. Yeah. And so I've seen a pattern because I ask these questions and successful people set goals differently. They set very lofty goals, but then they do something that no one else does. They then show everyone around them their role in it and what they get out of it. Not what I get out of it, not what does the company get out of it, but what do they get out of it? And I think that when you do that and you're able to get people to buy into your vision, your dream, it changes the perspective. So from a creative destruction standpoint, you as a leader need to come in and be proactive to show that, hey, this isn't about cutting. This is about the potential to grow. This in growth comes new job opportunities, new regions, you know, the ability to rise up through the company, to become a leader, all those things. But that starts with the leader acknowledging those opportunities, creating that vision. When you create a vision that everyone can buy into, it changes everything because then people, you know, they foam at the mouth. They dream about it and fantasize about it. They think about it throughout the day and they want so much to be part of it because you've painted something so intriguing, so exciting that they just want to be part of the whole process.
Yeah, leading with vision is something that's I think is very difficult for a lot of CEOs and
I think Reagan did it so well, Chris. Yeah. I mean, think about this. You guys, Reagan wanted to defeat communism and fix the economy. Everything else was a distraction. What about this, you know, distraction? Well, does it fix the economy or defeat communism? You know, otherwise I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. And these days, especially with social media and there's so many different ways to attack people and follow people. And, you know, it's really important, I think, to stay focused on your goals, you know, choose one, two, three things and do them really, really well. And I think that if you do that, you have a better chance for success.
Do you think that CEOs that you encounter get drawn into the minutia way too often?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
they feel like they have to solve it. They have to fix it.
This is one of my biggest talks. So there's this, I can't take credit for it, but there's this box four boxes within a box. So the top upper, it's ESBI. I don't know if you've seen this. Mm. E up in the upper left is I'm an employee. I have a job. S is I'm self-employed. I own a job. Mm. on the top of the other side is B. I'm a business owner. I've created a system that makes money. I don't even have to be there. And underneath it says I invest in systems that make money. I don't even have to be there. For me, I live my whole life to try to live on the right side of that box, B and I. And so I asked these CEOs, I'm like, how many of you go into the office each day? They all raise their hand. I'm like, how many of you want to stop that? They all raise their hand. You know what I say? I used to believe you. I don't believe you anymore. I think that's where you get all your accolades. It's where you have all your power. It's where people bow down. It's the dopamine hit, right? And so if you really want to change it, you have to empower others. You have to, just when you think you're the smartest one in the room, look in a different room. Find somebody better, smarter, hungrier, and replace yourself on a regular basis. So it's not bad or good. It's just, what do you really want?
Well,
if you want to be in the weeds, then that's where you'll be.
Well, and also it's how you define your identity, right?
Of course.
It's, yes. I mean, I'm working with businesses now that are looking at selling their businesses. And one of the biggest obstacles to getting a CEO to finally embrace the fact that there's a sale coming is releasing them of their identity.
Yeah.
Is talking with them very plainly about this fact that, hey, in X amount of days, you're not going to be the CEO anymore. This is going to go away, and you're going to have to find new purpose and new meaning. And what is your purpose and meaning in life? If it's this, then you're going to have a tough time.
Well, that's why most of these times, I mean, and it's almost 100% of the time. I mean, I hate to use that number, but it just seems to be where the CEO will have like a 2-year earnout or a 1-year earnout, or they've got within 3 months, they're like, I need to get the heck out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're no longer in control.
And they're no longer relevant.
Yeah, exactly.
And the new team comes in and the old CEO is sitting there and doing his thing, especially in family businesses when they sell. There's this idea that, oh, I can stick around and help the new owners and do my thing. And it never works.
No.
Well, I think it's funny, in family-owned businesses, I'll meet with the dad or the mom, that run the business, and they'll say, my son runs a business. I'm like, oh, really? The son says you're here every day. Making all the decisions. I'm just curious, in what way does that mean running the business? And, it's kind of an aha moment for the owner, because they're like, okay, well, maybe I'm here maybe too much these days. So it is interesting. But you're right. I mean, it is their identity.
Well, and going back to the point about minutia, I mean, so many CEOs get drawn into, and this was a factor in our company as well, drawn into stuff that just is not relevant to what they're trying to accomplish. Those three or four things, those three or four goals, leading with vision, and they get drawn into, a meeting about, HR policy, and you're like, what the heck am I doing here? And then all of a sudden you wake up, you leave the office that day and you feel like you got nothing done, because all you did was walk around, everyone's pulling you in to try to make their decisions for them because they don't want to.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I think that's important. It's all about empowering people. It's and then literally letting them fail, letting them succeed, and not being a micromanager. I mean, there's just no possible way you could build a giant organization if you're in the weeds every day. You have to be. I think the two things that separate real leadership from mediocre is they have to be a visionary leader, and the way they handle crisis, the way they handle adversity. And I talk about it all the time. It's the biggest differentiator, because listen, if you have this opportunity. Anyone can sail a ship through calm waters. It takes a real leader, a real captain, to take a ship, your family, your company, through rough seas, the crisis, with its crew, by the way, your family or your employees, and bring them out the other side. And here's the mindset shift, even stronger than when they started, because what now binds everyone together, the shared struggle, the shared experience, the shared pain. And so when real leaders acknowledge that, they don't try to hide from crisis. They deal with it, but they move forward and stronger because of it. It just changes the whole dynamic of a company, of a family.
Yeah, no question. What would you say? I mean, you've been doing this for a while, but you had a pretty good start in the sense of being at the knee of one of the great visionary and great leaders of our history. As we've talked about before.
Our favorite president,
Ronald Reagan. What were some of the key takeaways for you being there, post his presidential terms, and how did that lay the groundwork for what you became?
Yeah, I think that it was the kind of the principles and the values and the way he treated people. So I kind of even had to go back to some of the staff to verify so I didn't go rogue here and come up with my own list. But I think it's pretty simple. It's attitude of gratitude, loyalty, humility, and humor. I mean, here's, and you know, when you ask kids, like high school kids, I speak a lot to high school and college students. It's funny. I'll say, what do you think defines success? They're like money, power, you know, all these things. And then I'll say those four things about Ronald Reagan: attitude of gratitude, loyalty, humility, and humor. And they kind of give me this blank stare, but he appreciated people. He valued their time. He valued their opinions. And when you do that and you do it on a regular basis, what do the people around you want to do? What do they want to give you? More. Not because they have to, because they want to, because they like you in their own soul. And so he was constantly thanking people and appreciating people and valuing their opinion and listening to them. And that made a huge difference. And the other one was, and I think this is important, it's overlooked too often in leadership, is humor. I mean, this guy, you know, when tensions were high in a meeting, he would tell a joke, usually self-deprecating. What would that do to the air in the room? You know, take the pressure all the way off. I can relax. I can just, you know, I can just be myself. You know, he made it fun. He just constantly had just a unique perspective on life. And I think my favorite part of that whole experience, Sean, Chris, is that I had a hero and I put him on a pedestal. And when I met him, the pedestal went higher and higher and higher. Yeah. Usually in life, there's a statement, if you ever have a hero, don't ever meet them, because what usually happens, right? You're let down. But here, this guy was not only who I thought he was, but he was even better.
That is just a great way to put it, because we have lost the ability. Well, maybe we haven't lost the ability. There just is such a dearth of those types of personalities in this day and age, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, just people who are larger than
that. Not in politics. I mean, there isn't anybody in politics that measures up to Reagan in any of those.
If you were to ask Trump, he'd say that he does.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Don't get me started.
You know, but he'd say he measures up to, like,
good grief.
Abraham Lincoln.
You had to just put a pall on this discussion.
No, I'm not putting a pall.
When I'm speaking,
I'm just saying that I'm actually affirming what you're saying, that Reagan has become, and we talked about it last week, kind of a transcendent force in American politics. Anyone who's anyone, you know, measures, especially within the presidency, measures their success, measures their ability to lead against Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just so unique because, you know, you felt like he had your back. You know, you felt there was a humility about him. Like, think about this, you know, Mr. President, you're such a great communicator. No, I'm just fortunate to communicate great things. Mr. Yeah. President, you did this so well. Have you seen my staff? And again, when someone does that on a regular basis and it's real, it just makes you want to do more. It makes you want to give more.
Right.
And so I just challenge CEOs, leaders of families, you know, to really, you know, appreciate the people around them, you know, to have that humility, to have that loyalty, have people's back, to find humor in things around them. You know, when I finish my speeches, I ask a question about legacy. We talk about legacy, and I have them write down these CEOs. So picture 500 CEOs in a room, and I'll say, hey, I want you to answer this question. It's going to mess with me mentally, even when I ask it, but how will your children describe you to their children? And then I ask this, I say, not what they would say, in your wildest fantasy, I want you to write down right now what you would want them to say. Mm. And selfishly, just secretly, I look for two words, love and fun. Do you know that less than 10% of CEOs put fun on their sheet? So wow. Less than 10%. So out of 100 CEOs, less than 10 will put fun, that they were fun, a fun grandfather. And we're talking about grandchildren. Less than 10% put love on that sheet.
Wow.
And we're talking about grandchildren. I'm like, what are we doing all this for? They'll put hardworking or, you know, diligent or, you know, all these different terms. I'm like, we're talking about your grandchildren. So a lot of this is a realization of, like, really what is important in life? Because when I talk to business owners at the end of the day, I'm like, I have a strong feeling when the checks stop coming, they'll all stop coming too. They're not just going to stop by on a Sunday morning. You're sick. You need a blanket. You're cold. You need some soup. I mean, they're just not going to do it.
Right.
And so who are you left with, and what is your legacy truly going to be? And I would ask your listeners to really contemplate that. Like, as you go through your day-to-day life, like, where are you prioritizing your time? Where are you prioritizing your resources? And are you having fun, and are you showing love in life, and do you love life?
Such a profound approach. And it's sobering that these CEOs miss the mark. And I guess it's the nature of, you know, being a high-powered executive or running a company or, you know, feeling like the weight of the world is on your shoulders. But at the end of the day, you know, it just love and fun. I mean, I think those are great measurements, especially with grandkids. I mean, I think about my grandfather, my grandpa Stein. Love and fun are the first two things that come to mind. I mean, he was a successful guy, and he had all kinds of different things that went on in his life. But for me, as his grandson, it was fun and love.
I love that.
That's what matters. And it just makes me realize, as you've said this, I need to be focused on love and fun more. I mean, I feel like I do a decent job, but we can always do
See, more. I think I'm a really fun dad. I do.
You say so yourself.
If I do say so myself. I do. I
also talk
I feel
about
like the
CEO
last di- the last
I also really, talk about CEO disease, Chris. Yeah. Just
no, I the last 10 years have really been a gift I would say 8 years. It's been a gift because we, you know, when we sold our company, I had this choice. I can embrace this idea that, you know, being the CEO of this large family enterprise was my identity, or I could embrace what my legacy and my identity should be, and love and fun, taking care of my kids, taking my kids to school, picking them up, being part of their lives, being present. It's been a great gift, and not everybody gets to do that. So I'm unique in that regard, but it's been an amazing gift.
Well, you know, Chris, that gave me the chills. I love hearing that, by the way. I absolutely love it. I mean, not that you have to do that to get there, but I'm just saying, like, I love that you not only did it, but that you appreciate it.
Well, you know, I was watching a clip the other day with Michael Keaton, Batman. And he was telling these other actors, some kind of actors, you know, round table, that he disappeared for like 8 years. Didn't take any roles. And the reason was he had the opportunity to really dive into his family, take care of his kids. And he was telling all these other guys, if you have that opportunity, do it. And I had a very similar experience when I was going through a program with a nonprofit called the Halftime Institute shortly after we sold our company. And a gentleman looked at me straight in the eye and goes, do you have the ability to really dive into your children for the next 5 or 6 years? And I said, yeah, I think I do. He said, then do it, because he had done the same thing at a very young age. And that's and that's what I've been able to do, and it's been amazing. Well, and just now I'm starting to build, you know, God has me doing other things, but still with the caveat of I take my kids to school and I pick them up and in the afternoons from 3 to 6 I'm present.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that we are extremely blessed, and privileged.
Absolutely.
So there are a lot of people who might be listening and saying, well, look, I have to work, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours a week, you know. And I think the message is find that time.
Yep.
Because you don't get time back. And you have to sacrifice, quote unquote, some other things. And what you realize, because I did this when I was working 80 hours a week, you have to step back and say, okay, what am I going to do to make sure my kids know that I'm here?
Yeah.
And I didn't do a very good job of that for many years, making up for it now. But that is really important, I think, to get to that point where you would be described in two words of love and fun.
Oh, for 25 years, I was on the road. I was doing all sorts of things, but I found the time with my eldest daughter to make sure those things happen. And she would say I'm pretty fun.
Yeah, I think she'd say that.
Yeah.
So I have to tell you, though, that it's interesting. So out of my, you know, typical like 3-hour speech that I give to CEOs, there's this one 10 to 15 minutes that gets the most comments. And it goes back to what both of you were just saying, actually, which is I talk about this myth of work-life balance.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, you've heard speakers talk about it. You've read books about it. I think it's a lie. I think it's perpetrated on humans to make them feel guilty about their lives. And Sean, to what you said specifically, it goes back to the fact, like, I'll say, what time do you get home from work? And they'll say 6. And I'll say, what time your kids go to bed? And they'll 9. And I'm like, that's 3 hours. Where's the balance in that? And yet some of you will come home tonight and say, put on the game. I need to jump on a conference call. I need to return emails. And the family's like, we've been waiting. Right. We've been waiting all day. Give us a fraction of the time you just gave all those other people. So I present this option, and I challenge your listeners to try this. It's instead of work-life balance, it's work-life presence. It's just being where you are and being there fully. Because let's say you do have to work 80 hours a week, because a lot of people did. I did earlier on in my career. I mean, to make this all work. I mean, I grew up super poor. Like, I was working like crazy. But all I say is, if you gave 1 hour of real focused time where you were engaged in conversation, listening, responding, that's probably more than what most parents do in a week. Mm-hmm. And so I just challenge you to be present. And then I ask this question, and it's very sobering, because picture, you know, 500 CEOs in a room. And I say, so I'm going to ask you a question. All of you can know the answer the second I say it, but here goes. Who gets the worst of us? The absolute worst of us. And if you could picture 500 people go back in their chairs and the arms cross, and you could see it on their face, and then they go, family. And I go, no, specifically. And they're like, my spouse. Mm. And I say, so here's the good news. If that's not the case, you know, if that's not the case, congratulations, because that's not normal. But if it is the case, here's the good news. It ends today. The reign of terror is over. I'm like, you wouldn't treat your best client that way ever, would you? You'd never talk to me with that tone of voice. So just to give you an example, the other day I spoke in Mackinac Island, Michigan, 300 CEOs in that room. I get emails all the time. This woman sent me an email on an email address. She did some work to get a private one. It said, I don't know who you are or what you really said in that meeting, but on behalf of my family, thank you.
Yeah,
for the first time in 15 years, my husband has been home early, engaged with me, engaged with the kids. He said he didn't know where he went wrong in life, but that you showed him light. I just challenge your listeners to be present, to listen, to actually be in real conversation. That will be such a great lesson for your kids, to get off their phones and actually be engaged, not just in the house. The new COVID lies, I'm home all the time. No, no, you're in the building.
Right.
Be home means engaged.
Yeah. Boy, that's powerful. Great points.
That is, that hits home. That hits home completely.
Yep. It does for all of us. I mean, there's no halo sitting over this head. I mean, I have to work at the, it takes work.
Yeah.
I mean, because we get distracted. There's a million distractions out there. And we're, and you know, especially if you're running a business or you're part of a, or you're just trying to make your way through a job. I mean, you've got a boss, or you've got demands on your time, and then you've got family and spouse and kids. And so I get it, but I'm telling you, if you could just even carve out that little bit of time, it just makes all the difference in the world.
Well, and you, the key word I think there is presence.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that we miss. And and I can remember, you know, when I was in the middle of the rat race, you know, my wife saying the same thing to me. You're not present. You come home, but you're not present.
Yeah,
you're not here.
Yeah,
and the kids deserve to have you here. I just remember that completely.
Yeah, Dan, obviously you have much to offer, and so my hope is that there's some listeners out there that are saying, you know what, we need to hear more of him. How do people get a hold of you to get you scheduled to speak?
Well, if you go to, thank you, by the way, if you go to quigglegroup.com, Q-U-I-G-G-L-E, group.com, I created a Quiggle assessment that's on there. My podcast can be found there. That's free. I blog all the time on leadership, parenting, everything. You know, I'm in a very fortunate position where I've never marketed myself one time to speak. I speak, and then I'll get, you know, four or five speaking engagements out of that. So I speak about 40, 50 times a year. I get to do it all around the world. I absolutely love it. It's just, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I get paid to do it, but I would do it for free. It's just, it's so addicting to be around those people and to learn, learn. And, I just, you know, it's one of my favorite things in the world to do.
Great. Well, fantastic. You're obviously impactful. So we appreciate you taking the time today. This has been fantastic.
And going to the Quiggle Group, you can take the Quiggle assessment, which is very interesting.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I've had some really good response. I'm on a mission to change 5 million lives over the next 5 years. So we're going to sell 1.5 million tests and actually 2.5 million tests and donate 2.5 million tests. That's the goal.
Well, I'm going to take it because I want to know if I'm a creator or explorer or director or a guardian or an analyst or the royal.
Well, Chris, do you want to know why I did that? And this is interesting. Well, I did that because I would go around the room and ask these CEOs what they did for a living. You know what they would say? They would say architect, doctor, lawyer, construction, technology. I'm like, what did all of you just tell me? And they're like, what, you know, our industry or what we did. I'm like, after today, never tell somebody what you do. Tell them how you changed the world, how you make a difference in society, how you impact families. Because Google tests us, by the way, 20 years ago, we had a 20-minute attention span. Today, it's 8 seconds, according to Google. So in 8 seconds, if you're not interesting,
thanks to Google,
they'll swipe by you, swipe by your story, swipe by. And so it's important for us to find our value. And I get emails all the time from kids saying, hey, it helps you build a success slogan and story so people never swipe by you or your kids again. And I use it for my own children. CEOs use it for their companies. So there's science behind who you are, but then it helps you build the success slogan and story. And, it's so much fun.
Well, I plan on taking it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, Dan, thanks so much. Thanks for your friendship over these many, many decades now.
Well, Chris,
we have long bits of time when we connect and reconnect, but I've always considered you a great friend.
I love, first of all, what you built there, taking a family business and taking it to a next level, but then that realization of kind of what your priorities are, it's admirable. A lot of people don't do that because that does become your identity, and there's risk in that. And yet you took that risk, and I think you're benefiting, your family's benefiting from it. You've been such a great friend. So thank you, Sean. Really appreciate your time. And just challenge your listeners to work really hard to be the next best version of themselves on a regular basis.
Great.
Well, great, Dan. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All the best to your family this new year.
Thank you. And you too. Happy New Year.
God bless.
Take care, guys.
See you. Bye.